walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he'll save your soul. You gotta keep the devil.
Hey, and welcome to Oddcast Podcast. I'm James, and instead of having Mia with me today, I've got Sam Ruggieri.
Say hi, Sam. What's going on?
So, the reason Mia's not here is because of the subject matter. We're talking about The Wire versus the movie Traffic that came out in the year 2000, directed by Steven Soderbergh. She hasn't seen it, so she would have been useless in this conversation, but you are a lover of The Wire.
Oh, obsessed with it.
And you've got all five on DVD, correct?
I do, whether from theft or borrowing. Yes, I own them.
And but you hadn't seen Traffic before.
No, I did not.
Until this year, right?
Yeah, just a couple of weeks ago.
That's the same thing that happened to me. Is I watched The Wire first and then Traffic.
Yeah.
And I was kind of taken aback at how different Traffic was from The Wire.
It's almost a little hokey.
Like, it's a lot more optimistic, I feel,
yeah,
at
definitely.
The end than The Wire is.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to talk about that is because I was wondering if it had anything to do with 9/11 and the Bush administration versus the economic bubble that we had at the end of the 90s and how everything was kind of a little bit more optimistic anyway, like, you know, with the Clinton administration. I know he was in trouble for getting his dick sucked by Lewinsky, but...
I mean,
didn't things seem a lot more optimistic back in the early or in the late 90s and early 2000s?
I would have been like 10, so things were pretty optimistic for me at least. But yeah, I know what you're talking about, at least in terms of politically.
Yeah, like,
and that's just very much represented in the movie, I think.
Right, because this movie won the Best Picture Award for that year's Oscars.
Sure.
Yeah, it won the Best Picture Award for the year 2000. But compared to The Wire, which I understand The Wire has 53 hours to do everything it wants to do, and this only had 2.5.
Yeah.
But it just felt so fake compared to The Wire.
No, definitely. I mean, I don't know if, like, Hollywooded is a good term to use, but...
Do you think that's it? Do you think it's because this was put out by... The DVD's Criterion, but I think the actual production was done by Universal?
It might even just be the fact that it's a, what do you call it? It's a movie as opposed to a TV show. In a TV show, you build up an audience and you ask a lot to do, or you ask a lot more of the viewers to keep coming back and keep watching it, as opposed to a movie that just buy a ticket and go see it once and then that's it. You know, it's not like they have to keep coming back every week. But I think that's just a part of it, too, as opposed to... Or that part of it that goes along with what you're talking about with post 9/11 and all that. Because they definitely talk about that in The Wire.
Right. You were saying, what were you saying about the Homeland Security at the beginning?
Yeah, in the first season, when they're trying to take down Barksdale's whole crew and drug organization, and they bring that into their own department, is refusing to go along with it for the most part. They kind of just want to get dope on the table and get a couple of quick arrests. So instead they take it to the FBI, who are not interested primarily because it doesn't have to do with terrorism. And that's like something that's brought up a lot in the first season. Whenever McNulty goes to his friend who works in the FBI, he's constantly saying things like, you know, if they don't have turbans on their heads, then they're not interested. Things like that.
And it's kind of present in the second season, too, because they're talking about the docks.
Yeah.
And bringing stuff in and how unsafe that is as far as Homeland Security, right?
Yeah, yeah. They were talking about how they weren't sure what was going down with the, 12, 13, 14 girls, saying how so many more people are being stowaways because post 9/11 it's harder to get in.
Right. And then also that's how the Greek finds out that Spock is going to turn him in, is because of his mole inside the FBI, too, right?
Can't remember. I've yet to get all the way through that one yet, and last time I saw it was like a year ago.
Okay.
Gotta be refreshed on that.
But
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I think that's like the Greek has a mole in the FBI, and the FBI when they finally come in is just because of the whole security aspect of it, not the dead hookers in the I mean, the movie has similarities with The Wire. Like you have a lot of different narratives woven together to create a full story.
Yeah.
Including the bad guys, or quote unquote bad guys. Drug dealers. But again, it just feels a little bit too optimistic because at the end when Don Cheadle comes in and he puts that bug on the desk.
And then he walks away and he's like grinning like,
right.
Hey, we got him. I mean, this is just frustrating for me because that seemed really unrealistic in terms of, I don't think that's how it would actually work.
Yeah, would that even be legal?
No, they would have to. I'm sure it would be one way or another legal to you know, what do you call it, bug a guy's house like that. But they wouldn't do it like that with him going in there and causing a fight. That is way too, you know, risky.
Right.
They could easily find that the second after it would be. So for some reason, when I just saw that, I was like, this is BS, you know. But that whole thing about him leaving about like, hey, we got him. It was way too, I don't know. Him and, who was the other guy? Louis Guzman?
Yeah.
Guzman. That whole business, they were talking in the car about how, you know, we're going to get this and we're, you know, keep fighting no matter what, that kind of thing. And to me, that is really contrasting to The Wire. You got Herc and Carver, who are constantly, especially Herc, constantly joking about how it's not something that they're going to win. Right. And there's like that line. And they constantly bring that up. There are a couple of lines like he says, this is why we'll never win. When they mess up, they get beat. When we mess up, we get pensions. And like a couple of others, like...
Right, because one of the underlying themes of The Wire is how fucking stupid the people in charge are.
Yeah.
Like, Volchek, like, getting to be the commissioner at the end of the series is perfect. Because he was the most idiotic, retarded of all the police captains.
God, all those guys. Burrell, too.
Oh, Burrell and...
Rawls, yeah.
Rawls, he's...
And they're all, you know, it's all, what do you call it, all career-based, as opposed to... And that's kind of another underlying theme, is all these cops who try to do something because it's good police work, getting punished for it, as opposed to it being good political work or good, like the whole thing with Freeman, why he was in the pawn shop unit.
Right.
McNulty being put on the boat and Daniels being put in the, what was it, evidence locker?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the fifth season, it just kind of gets out of hand with the bodies that they're faking.
Have you watched that recently, the fifth season?
No. That would have been the most recent one I've seen since the first season.
Oh. I think you need to watch the fifth season again, because the first time I watched it, I kind of agreed with everybody saying like that they kind of jumped the shark. But you watch it again, and it's a lot better. It's a lot more in line with the other four seasons.
Are you a bit more realistic?
Yeah, like you can kind of buy it. Like if you can buy Hamsterdam, you can buy what McNulty's doing.
Yeah, I think that was the thing about the fifth season, was that it seemed so unrealistic that he would go to those lengths to, you know, fake all those murders. But then I guess at the same time, you can believe the underlying desperation that would cause him to do that.
I think it definitely works in the fact that, like, everything he tries to do, when he tries to make it go, it doesn't. And then when it finally starts getting built up, he wants to stop it, but he can't. Like, I think it works in that way, because either way, it frustrates him to no end. So he never wins.
Yeah.
And I think it works better. I think the fifth season is judged a little too harshly. Like, it's still great.
I think a lot of people also, because it's the newspapers, and a lot of people, like, speaking from friends of mine, they're like, oh, that's boring. It's still good. Plus, it's because it's coming down from the fourth season, which was, like, everyone is like, fourth season is the best.
I think, well, yeah, fourth season was the best.
I mean, it was amazing, yeah.
I think that's the best, like, season of any television show ever.
Yeah, seriously.
Speaking of Herc, like, who are your most hated characters in The Wire?
Oh, you hate Herc?
I hate Herc.
I towards the end, don't like Herc. I don't like where he went.
Because of what he does to Randy in the fourth season by not, like by not responding to Carver's request, like he fucks over that Randy kid.
Wait, what? I remember Randy getting effed over, and because of Carver, what did Herc do though?
Herc, you know, was trying to get off for losing that video that he took out without signing up properly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he was busy with that. And
isn't that why he gets fired, or he gets let go?
That's why he gets fired. But Carver tries to get him to help. Tries to get Herc to help. The little kid, what was his name? Randy.
Yeah.
By
that was rough.
And he turns it over, and he basically lets it known that Randy was the snitch.
Oh, seriously?
And that's why Randy gets fucked over.
That's
because of Herc.
Messed up.
And then at the end, Herc is the reason why Marlo gets off.
Yeah, he joins in with Levy, right. Or Levi, or whatever.
And
it is.
He keeps on fucking over investigations.
Yeah.
Like Carver grows and becomes a lieutenant, right?
Yeah. He climbs up the ladder.
Right, and Herc is just
kind of
a douchebag. Yeah, I hate Herc.
Yeah, understandable.
Plus, the actor who plays him, it like screams Brooklyn, and
that's what always kind of annoyed me because he's got a Brooklyn accent and he's supposed to be from Baltimore, and that's just really that always got under my skin for some reason.
Yeah,
like the same way whenever McNulty gets mad and he's just like he might as well be, you know. A boy from like a Charles Dickens novel. Cause he's just like, oi, oi, let me get the, you know.
You don't buy Dominique
West, right?
West, yeah. Right. You don't buy his accent.
It's like fine until he like starts yelling, and then he's like, clearly you need to get to, you know, it's just too obvious. What's his name? Idris Elba. He's British too, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah,
really?
Stringer, yeah.
Stringer Bell's British.
He's British, and he was on The Office, too, and they did some interview with him on NPR in, like, Fresh Air, and he was like, he's got a really Cockney accent.
You're kidding.
Dead serious.
I would...
Really, really bright, like, hello, you know.
I would think he was, like, punking me if he did that.
No. And he says that when people come up to him, and like, oh, you're Stringer, it freaks him out.
That would be weird.
Yeah.
But, like, who do you hate?
Who do I hate? Huh. Man, that was rough. I've never really thought about that. The upper guys. The mayor, not Carchetti, the original mayor. I can't remember. Royce, yeah. And then there is Burrell, Valchek, those three dudes. First season, when you, like, first meet Prez, hated him, but he grows into a better character. Right. I mean, he's a douchebag when you first meet him, basically.
He's kind of a fuck-up all the way through, because it's in the third season when he kills the cop,
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's not really until the fourth season where he kind of comes into his own, I guess.
Right, as the teacher?
Yeah.
Which, that has to be the saddest scene when Dookie is playing
back.
Him.
Like comes back to him. Oh, God. Yeah, is that when he has the big-ass beard, too?
Right, yeah. I think that's the only time you see him in the fifth season.
Yeah, and that's when Dookie becomes an addict, too, isn't it?
Yeah.
That whole thing, Dookie's storyline and, was it, Randy's storyline are two of, like, the most depressing.
Right.
In that, and I just, not too long ago, I watched the one where Poot and Bodhi shoot Wallace.
Oh.
So messed up.
That is messed up.
That's like,
And then Bodhi gets the same kind of treatment.
Yeah, he gets
in the fourth season.
Yep. Yeah. What with the corner?
Yeah.
And because they see him with McNulty.
Right. But like he too is starting to like get disillusioned with why do they have to be killed? Like why is everybody getting killed?
Yeah.
Like why do you have to run your business that way?
That's something I was thinking about. That's something that comes up a lot in the show, and also this whole, the whole stay in it for the family thing. It's kind of like, you know, The Godfather, because you got D, who they're pinning everything on when he's trying to get out.
Right.
And then you got in the fourth season, who is it, Naaman? And Naaman's mom is Weebay's wife or whatever. Is
right.
Trying to push him to stay in this stuff, and he's like, no, I don't want to do it anymore. And that's when Weebay's like, no, let him out. And he gets, what is it, Colvin, right? Colvin ends up adopting him, I think.
Yeah. Funny.
Which was almost, if it wasn't for the fact that you have all this stuff with Dookie and Randy, that whole thing would have seemed a bit too almost like Disney-ish. But you're contrasting that with a kid who becomes addicted to heroin and a kid who loses his mom and gets beat up at a boy's home. And so it's...
And Michael, who becomes an assassin.
Yeah. That's when he gets up with Chris and Snoop, right?
Right.
Yeah, so that all those three things made it even that out of considerably.
As long as there's three unhappy endings, we can have one happy.
That's right. There you go. There you go.
Whereas in Traffic, pretty much every single one was tied up happily. Like, even the even the bad guys had Dennis Quaid killed because he tried to fuck him over while he was in prison.
That's right. I forgot Dennis Quaid was in that movie.
Yeah. Like, as the family Sneaky, lawyer.
Creepy dude.
Yeah. But even he gets killed.
Yeah. Like, and that, I don't know, that whole ending with the traffic lights. Not traffic lights. Baseball lights. This is just too...
Yeah.
Too hokey.
Yeah. It's just... And that one Best Picture. Like...
What else... You know what else was up that year?
Let me look real quick. Okay, so I was actually wrong. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Oh!
But Gladiator won.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Okay. And it was up against Chocolat, Aaron Brockovich, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and Gladiator. And Gladiator won. But it was still nominated.
It won something, though, didn't it? Like,
it won director. Best Director, Best Supporting Screenplay? Actor, and I think Screenplay. Hold on.
Who was the Best Supporting Actor? Was that, what's his name? The Spanish?
Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah, that's right.
See, and even he, like, he was the most grounded cop in the fact that he did little bitty scams. Like the towing the car and calling it and having to bribe American tourists to get their cars back.
Yeah.
But even he, like, when he got mixed in with the drugs, he was just like, yeah, like, no, this is wrong. Whereas that kind of morality wasn't really present in The Wire.
No, God, no.
And,
I mean, I just think that's a way that it's more realistic. Because nobody's. Has morality. Come on.
Yeah, it won Best Supporting Actor, Best Director, Best Editing, and then Best Screenplay on material previously produced or published. So basically adapted.
Oh, yeah. Wire didn't win anything, did it? While I was on. No awards.
I don't even think it was nominated for Emmys.
Which is ridiculous. Like, it's literally the best show on television.
So, you know, you're talking about the second season kind of being self-contained?
Yeah, kind of.
Do you like that, or do you not like that? Because a lot of people think the second season is the best, and a lot of people think it's the worst. Yeah.
I've never heard anyone say it's the best. That surprises me. No.
I've heard a bunch of people say, like, the second season I thought was the best one.
I thought it was a good season. I don't know. See, the problem is, they're all so good. It's,
Right.
Hard to, you know, I don't even think I can pick out a worst. I don't know, the fact that it's kind of self-contained, it's not like it's completely standing on its own, because you still got all the same characters, just with new characters. And you still have all the stuff with D'Angelo and Stringer, his kind of rise to trying to be, or not D'Angelo, Avon and Stringer's kind of rise to be a legitimate businessman. Or at least as legitimate as he can attempt to be. I don't know, the whole plot line of the second season was pretty interesting. So, because it was interesting enough, I had no issues with it.
I liked how it kind of expanded the whole, it kind of expanded the city a little bit.
Yeah.
And you got to see the working class people who don't really have anything to do with the drugs, don't really want to, but they get roped into it anyway.
Yeah.
And then also how the drug dealers who the police are trying to take down, they don't even know, like, they have nobody on file who actually matters who's bringing in the drugs, like the Greek and the other guy, the Greek's right-hand man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they don't even know who those people are. They don't have them on any kind of file or anything.
Yeah.
So it kind of, again, shows how pointless trying to take down the drug people is.
Yeah, because it's always going to get to a point where it just stops.
Because, like, you replace Proposition... you have Proposition Joe, but, he can be replaced by Cheese, and he could be replaced by somebody else, and you get rid of Stringer, and up comes Marlowe. Like.
Yeah, exactly.
But they don't even matter because the Greek and the other guy are just right there all the time.
Bringing the stuff in. Yeah.
I like the second season.
I like the, what's a good word? Not stark, that sounds kind of, but bleakness, maybe? I mean, it starts out, you know, with the 14 murders, and then, I don't know, it's a little dark, kind of, I think. And then the third season goes into all the political stuff.
Do you like Carcetti?
I have mixed feelings, I guess.
I don't think he's a good enough actor. Like, that's the one time where I was like, I think the actor is struggling with the character.
I mean, to me, it was just boring politician, so boring actor.
You don't really care.
A lot of the political stuff that wasn't related to, like, the policing, I thought was kind of, not necessarily boring, but didn't grab my interest as much, because it was a bunch of, like, oh, we need these votes, so we're going to split this district, and that was kind of like, ugh, okay. But when they got into the, all the bits about scandals involved in it, that, you know, picked up interest a little more, because that was more the policing side of it.
I think it's also interesting, how, like, the politics do kind of fuck over the kids, though, when he doesn't want to go to Annapolis and beg for the money from the Republican because he's a Democrat, and so he rejects the $40 million that the Republican gives him, even though that would have fixed everything with the schools. So that made the fifth season where the police didn't have the money that they wanted for the bonuses and overtime,
yeah.
Which made McNulty do his stunt.
Yeah.
So, like, the politics, while boring, more boring than the police work, it does have, like, an effect.
Yeah, it trickled down. This is why I'm watching it again, man. I gotta pick up on this stuff.
And, like, you know, even McNulty kind of fucks over Dookie, because if it wasn't for McNulty has something to do with the reason that Michael runs afoul of Chris and Snoop and Marlo.
He shoots him, doesn't he? He shoots Snoop.
He shoots Snoop. Like, because they, what is it?
That's the end of the fifth season, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's when he becomes, like, the new Omar, kind of.
Right.
He starts his own little stick-up thing.
And a lot of people had problems with that.
About, really?
At the end of it, how cyclical it was. Like, Sid Nora becoming the new McNulty, and Doogie becoming the new Bubbles, and Michael becoming the new Omar.
What did they not like about that? I mean,
I thought that it was, like, too cutesy, I guess.
I guess in a way, but I think it's also realistic in the sense, I mean, if you think about it, it's not like there's, like, one person like that, just one, you know, it's like there's this only one cop, or there's this one heroin addict. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people who are like that, and when, you know, eventually those people gravitate towards those, I don't know, for lack of a better word, roles, positions.
But there's something that McNulty does where it directly affects Michael, and that makes Dookie have to go out on his own. So, like, even McNulty trying to do good fucks over Dookie without even knowing him.
Something to do with, I know, isn't Michael in charge? Someone ends up, I'm getting ahead of myself. Michael gets Chris to kill his stepdad, right?
Right.
That has nothing to do with Dookie, though.
Right.
Does he, like, get Chris to kill, like, Dookie's parents or something? Or
no.
I can't really remember how Dookie kind of hopped off the wagon with all that stuff.
Because Dookie doesn't have any respect on the streets, and so
because he starts slinging, right?
Right. And so instead of being on the corners, Michael makes him take care of his little brother.
That's right.
And Dookie's worried about his manhood, like, being basically a kid caregiver. So he goes and starts getting extra money with that junkie selling metal.
Right, right.
And that's how he gets the taste for heroin.
Gotcha. I think I remember that now.
So when Michael can't house him anymore after he's on the run from Marlo, Dookie has to go live with that guy, and that guy gets him on drugs.
Right. Oof, yeah. But it's something to do with what McNulty did that...
Because of McNulty's serial killer scheme, and, like, the papers pick up on something... That makes, I think, Marlo suspicious, or, like, tips them off, and it...
Oh, does it have something to do with them finding the bodies in the warehouses? Not warehouses, row houses?
That's how they find the stepdad, who eventually gets Chris in trouble.
But isn't that kind of how they get onto Marlo's trail?
Right.
Is all the bodies in the row houses.
And then with the clocks and everything, in the fifth season, when they use the clocks as the...
Right, right.
As the map coordinates to get to pickups and everything.
Yeah. God.
But that's an illegal wire because of McNulty.
It's a good show. I'm remembering all these details. I'm like, God damn.
That's it. Because of McNulty's illegal wiretap, the lawyer figures out that it was an illegal wiretap. Yeah. But the people, the policemen are saying that it was a completely legitimate wiretap, so they don't lose the case. And so the lawyer... talks to Marlo, and Marlo's like, the only people who know it are this, this, and this. And he's like, so Michael's the only one that could have fucked us over.
Oh, so that's...
When in reality, it was an illegal wiretap.
Gotcha.
So because of McNulty's illegal wiretap, Dookie goes on drugs.
Oof.
It's kind of transitive, I know, but...
No, I mean, it all makes sense.
But that's how good The Wire is.
Yeah, like, seriously.
One character who never meets another one fucks him over.
Which is more interesting, I think, than how they did in Traffic. Because, like, there was that whole... I remember when I was reading about Traffic before watching, it was like, five different stories, you know, seemingly unrelated, but all connected. I mean, they're connected in, like, the sense that, like, this person is related to that person, or this person passes this person in the street. It's right. Not, like, an actual... They may be connected, but they don't affect each other.
Right. And I think Traffic's to blame for other movies like Crash and all the other ones that are, like, all these stories in
12 storylines. Right. You didn't like Crash?
I do like Crash. And, in fact, Boots loves Crash, so he'll give me shit if he gets this. But it's not the best movie. I didn't think it was better than Brokeback Mountain that year.
When it came out that same year?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
I think it was 2005, right?
I don't know. But,
but you're right.
Like Buffalo Wings.
Like, Traffic brags about how it's got five different stories, while The Wire has about 15.
Yeah, seriously. Like, if that, you know, it seems like an episode of just, like, two characters can be a story. And also, what else? I'm trying to think of, like, the kind of the more optimistic side versus the more... Even the scenes of, like, the dirty realism of Traffic when, like, she becomes a hooker and is, you know, doing her dealer and all that. Even all that just seemed too... Like, it just didn't look real. You know, as opposed to The Wire where you got... I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that you got, like, characters who are actually guys on the street playing... characters of guys on the street.
Right.
Like former convicts that, you know, playing convicts.
Yeah, and like, didn't it seem in Traffic how the daughter's fall to being an addict was really, really swift? Like, like you see the first scene where
freebasing
Topher,
cocaine and Topher gives her, like...
Yeah, and then she's like on the streets whoring herself out like, like 20 minutes later. And you're like, damn, that was quick.
Oh, God, and I hated his character in that movie.
Yeah, like that speech he gives Michael Douglas telling him how it really is.
That's so stupid.
I think it's just because I don't like Topher Grace.
Yeah, that's also
unless he's being a dweeb in the 70s. Like, that's what he was made for. And
that's all he should be.
Right, they should put him down now because he's kind of worthless.
We don't need another one to date with Tad Hamilton.
Or, what's that one movie with Quaid? It all comes back to Dennis Quaid.
Oh, what was that? Where he's like, my boss's daughter.
Right.
God.
The year that the fourth season came out.
Yeah.
The Wire was not even nominated for an outstanding drama series.
Really?
It was up against Boston Legal, Damages, Dexter, House, Lost, and Mad Men.
Okay, see, that's Damages? Is that the show with Glenn Close with, like, those constant ads?
Yes.
My God, that is ridiculous. Boston Legal. No one gives a crap about Boston Legal. Lost is, you know, I like Lost. Mad Men, apparently it's good. Dexter's amazing. House, ugh, come on.
I haven't seen Dexter.
Dexter's pretty good. You gotta watch at least the first two seasons.
That's a lot of...
I know, that's a lot to commit to, isn't it?
That is a lot to commit to. Generally, if the first season's not any good, I don't really want
to
watch the
second. Well, you don't have to, like, I mean, in order to like it, I have to watch the first two. You can watch the first, and...
Amelia tried to get me on Weeds.
Don't. It's not worth it.
Really?
I watched first. It just becomes so terrible.
Really?
Like, the first couple of seasons are okay. The third one, so bad. Everything after that is bullshit.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Amelia and I have had many arguments, many as in one. But for the sake of drama, many Weeds arguments. Really, that's a show that I think is very unrealistic.
Really?
Because it's about this, you know, suburban... weed dealer who is constantly getting into all these crazy predicaments with drug dealers, and you know, he's like, I'm just a mom, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't understand these rules of the streets. And it's so hokey. I don't know, not nearly as good as The Wire, which I gotta keep repping.
I listened to another podcast called The BS Report. And they were talking about the best movies of the decade, and one of the people on that podcast said, well, I think the best movies this year were TV shows, like the best entertainment.
Yeah.
And how Like, in the 90s, it was all about the independent cinema, like Pulp Fiction and Clerks and Sex, Lies, Videotape. Like, that whole scene.
Was that... That was this guy, too, right? Steve Soderbergh?
Right.
Yeah.
But in the 2000s, that kind of artistic sensibilities all went to television shows, and that's why you have The Sopranos, The Wire, 6 Feet Under, Mad Men,
I think
Breaking
Bad,
stuff like that.
Complete sense. Because, you know... It just seems so much like all, like, quote-unquote, you know, movie watching, if it's not, if I'm not, like, going to the actual theater to see something. It's all just TV shows instead.
Right.
Because it just seemed better. I mean, I went to Blockbusters not too long ago, and it was, you know, new releases, amazed to see how many crappy movies come out. There's that, so many.
That Blockbuster in Greenbelt is closing. Did
yeah.
you see that?
Yep, yep.
It's the end of an era.
I was trying to find The Wicker Man, which is a terrible movie.
The original or the remake?
No, the remake.
Okay.
Have you seen that?
With Nicolas Cage?
It's probably the most hilarious bad movie I've ever seen. Next to Cabin Fever, which is another terrible bad movie.
Cabin Fever, isn't that what got Eli Roth famous?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that was the same dude. What was that movie in Nazis killing
oh,
Nazis?
Oh, Inglourious Bastards?
Yeah, I didn't realize that was him.
Yeah, The Bear Jew.
That was an awesome movie.
It wasn't awesome. Oh, you saw it?
I saw it twice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was. You saw District 9 and you didn't like that.
I didn't like District 9.
But you you missed part of it.
I missed about the middle. I missed the middle. I wouldn't say I didn't like it. I'd say I think we were talking about this, right? That whole scene where he's like. I was like following it until there's that scene where the guy who looked like Murray from Flight of the Conchords was talking to the alien and he was like. You know, go now before I change my mind. And he started tearing up. That to me was just too, too much.
Too cliched.
Exactly. It's like, you know, it's, what is this, E.T.? Come on.
And to bring it on back, we don't like cliches. That's why The Wire is better.
There you go. Wire is very cliche-free, I think.
Which yeah.
goes back to its realism. Especially...
Other than the fact that Irishmen drink.
Yeah. But, I mean, cliche, not the truth. But maybe it's a cop's drink, who knows, and cops yeah. happen to be Irish, but maybe it's a all right. Did you notice after The Wire came out they have the show Southland? They had that's when that Southland was when The Wire ended, that show The Southland first started coming out. This is like with the guy from the OC.
Oh, Ben McKenzie? Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever watch that?
It got canceled.
Good. It was probably bullcrap.
Okay.
But they like tried to follow, I don't even think I watched it, but just like reading reviews because it just looked like a Wire ripoff. And they even tried to follow like the whole formula of The Wire. Like, this is a show that follows the lives of the policemen and the dealers, you know? It's so dynamic. Like, that's the difference between The Wire and Southland and all those other terrible cop shows. Law & Order, Bones, which is the worst show in the planet, if you've ever seen that show.
Bones?
Bones. So terrible.
Me and my sister watch Bones every time we come together.
Like, really?
Yeah, we...
Do you like that show?
We run through them because they're so, like... I initially didn't really like it.
Oh, God.
No, it's so much fun. Like, how, like... Everything gets perfectly resolved in an hour.
That's exactly why I don't like it. That's the difference between Bones or those shows and The Wire. Is you know, it's like on this episode, there's a pedophile on the loose, and then like at the end of the episode, we're done. Pedophile's captured. Kids had their memories magically erased, and they're completely fine. Whereas on The Wire, it's you know, it's realistic. It doesn't take an hour to find a pedophile. You know, it takes a good 12 months to, if you're lucky, end a drug bust.
Well, some people actually say that was why The Wire never caught on.
Well, it was why it was episodic as opposed
right.
to...
Like, there's yeah. not... When you think about The Wire, you can't say, like, oh, this... My favorite episode was...
Yeah.
You have
yeah.
to say, like, my favorite season, because one episode, you don't really get how great it is.
No, it's all completely over time. It's like, it's a serial. It's like when they would release... You know, each episode is a chapter of a book.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's funny that you say that.
Homicide.
Southland.
Yeah.
Because David Simon, the creator of The Wire, did a show called Homicide: Life on the Street.
Yeah, I read that book too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that he wrote actually.
Okay.
And a lot of the stuff that was in that book he used in Homicide and in The Wire. I've never seen Homicide before, so I only could like recognize it.
So, do you think that Southland and this Homicide didn't work because it was on network.
Didn't Homicide last pretty long, though? Like 7 years, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it ran for 7 seasons.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it failed.
No, it was. I think it was pretty popular when I was out.
Oh, yeah. Ran for 7 seasons. It even had Richard Belzer in it.
Who's that?
The guy with the sunglasses on Law & Order.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe that was a crossover.
But no, it took place in Baltimore, too.
Really?
Yeah, because that's where all his stuff takes place, because he worked in Baltimore.
But a lot of the characters from his book, Homicide book, it was a true crime book. It wasn't like a novel. There were characters that he adapted into The Wire and Homicide. Like Cuddy. Cuddy was in the book. Dennis Cuddy.
Oh, the...
the boxer.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm trying to remember who else. I think there was like a Bubbles-type character. Although, I read somewhere that he said that was more of a composite. Like, a lot of the characters were either composites or directly based on people.
Well, you
Jay
know...
Landsman. He was... the original Jay Landsman was in The Wire.
Oh, really?
The character that they have in the third season with the mustache and the glasses, he kind of looks like he could be, like, an uncle at a party. Very dad-looking. Bunny Colvin's partner, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is Jay Landsman. The actual Jay Landsman.
Really?
The big guy.
Yeah, the fat guy. Yeah. Wow.
And apparently he's just like him. Which is so weird, because he's so straight-laced as that mustache dude.
Yeah. Okay, wow. You know considerably more about The Wire than I do.
Dude, The Wire.
I didn't know all about that.
That's why you gotta get the DVDs, man. Check out the special features.
Well, I knew that the guy that Cuddy, the preacher man.
Yeah, the deacon.
That is who Addict. Barksdale is based on,
yeah,
right?
That's right, yeah.
Which drug lord. Which blew my mind.
I think he did 20 years, 40 years?
In prison?
I don't know what it was, but he was in there a long time.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
Barksdale is an interesting character. I don't know.
Barksdale and Stringer. See, the third season, if it wasn't for the fact that the fourth season is so great, I think the third season would be the best.
Their whole dynamic.
Like, the fall of Barksdale and Stringer.
Yeah.
Because, like, both of them are so stupid and short-sighted in some of the stuff. Like, Stringer really doesn't understand the street at all.
Yeah.
And then Barksdale doesn't really understand
the business side
at all.
And it seems like, you know, Stringer is just trying to get his hand in there in Barksdale and kind of puppet him, and he's just too dumb to get it. I don't know.
A lot of people don't like Barksdale.
I think he's, you know, like you said, just not very smart. And Stringer's just kind of like letting him believe that he's got control when he's really... he kind of loses control of the whole thing. I guess the fact that he's in prison has a lot to do with that, too.
Well, and the fact that even in the fifth season, when you see him for, like, 2 episodes, when he's talking to Marlo, how he fucks over Prop Joe just because of East West.
Yeah.
Like, he basically gets Prop Joe killed just because he's like, East Side versus West Side. I fuck that co-op shit when it's working perfectly.
Yeah. Like, that co-op was the whole interesting part of that was third season, right? When he sets all that up.
Right.
That was a good plot point.
See, Prop Joe is one of my favorites.
Have you seen The Wire prequels?
No.
They're kind of hokey, but I was like searching stuff on YouTube, and I was looking for shit on The Wire, and you know, as I do. And this is where I found The Wire with a laugh track. But anyway, it was like, at first I thought it was like BS, like something that I don't know where they came from. I thought it was something that, like, you know, just these independent filmmakers made at, like, as a college project or something, where it was like Prop Joe as a little kid for like a minute, and Omar is like doing his first stick up as a little kid. And I just thought it was just some made up thing. But then they had another one where it was Jimmy meeting Bunk for the first time.
And it was the actual characters?
It was the actual actor. So I was like, oh, I guess this is real. And yeah, it was cool, but at the same time, it was kind of cutesy. It was like the origins, you know? It was like when a movie comes out and then they write like a 90 page novel about, you know, pre Star Wars or something.
Huh. Did Omar as a kid have the.
No.
No?
I don't think so.
I want to find out how he got that scar.
Yeah, they should make a, what are those things called? Like a prequel graphic novel.
Yeah.
Story of Omar.
Omar was one of my favorites, too.
He's probably definitely my favorite character on the show.
Kennard
kills him. Because he's the most interesting.
Out of nowhere.
The gay black Robin Hood.
Yeah. That's an interesting character. And that was a composite of a couple of different people too, right?
Probably. I don't know. Just,
or was he just made up?
I have no idea. But I'm sure, I think they said that there were plenty of stick-up artists there.
I know that character was only supposed to be in the first season.
Really?
And then he was so popular that they just brought him back on.
And that's funny.
He was supposed to die.
In the first season?
Yeah. He was supposed to get killed in like episode 7 or 8. Something.
Man,
like
that would have sucked.
Yeah.
They got a lot of mileage with that dude too.
Like every season.
Yeah, because he's probably the best, or at least most interesting character on the show.
Right. They kill that blind guy to get him
Ooh,
back.
Yeah. That sucks.
That was sad. There's a lot of spoilers in this podcast.
We you might have said spoilers at the beginning. But I mean, come on. It's not like...
If you haven't seen The Wire yet, yeah, why are you listening to this
exactly.
content?
Exactly. You know, I'm going to talk about The Wire. And...
I think we've covered everything.
Good, good.
Just rounding up, do you think Traffic is good enough to recommend to people to watch, or...
I'd much rather recommend The Wire, of course, but, you know, that takes a lot of commitment, 53 hours as opposed to 2.5.
Right.
Yeah, I guess. It wasn't my favorite movie. I thought it was a good movie, though, but there are aspects of it that were, like...
Do you think it was better than the movie we just saw, The Informant? Huh. Which is Soderbergh again? It's kind of his return to commercial mainstream.
Didn't he do those Oceans movies?
Yeah, but those movies, I mean, they are commercial and mainstream, but, like, I think he did those just to offset the crazy projects that he did on the side while he was doing those.
What were those?
Like, Full Frontal and Bubble and smaller movies that you've probably never even heard of.
Nope, never heard of.
Right. Like, yeah. And so he's doing, like, The Girlfriend Experience.
What's that?
It's that movie that he did where... He used a real porn star to be this hooker who gets paid to be like a girlfriend. Like, instead of just having sex, she's also paid to pretend that she's your girlfriend.
That's weird.
I think it's rentable now. I think you can rent it now. I heard it was good.
No longer the Greenbelt Blockbuster.
Yeah. But anyway, The Informant was kind of looked at as the first time that he's tried to bring critical and commercial at the same time. Because he's kind of been...
That makes sense.
Because the Ocean movies were commercial, but not critically successful.
Was The Informant the one... Was that the one that had all the stand-up... I remember the movie, but I'm trying... Is that right. The one with all the comedians in it?
Right.
That was funny.
Like the Smothers Brothers and...
Yeah, and Patton Oswalt.
Joel
and...
McHale.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. To me, there are two different, like, categories of movies, so it's kind of hard to compare them, I guess.
That's true.
Clearly, he's obsessed with using color. It's like The Wire was either bright, you know, bright yellow, deep blue.
You mean Traffic?
Traffic, yeah, yeah. Sorry. And The Informant was just orange, like that whole movie.
That's true. Maybe color schemes is something that Soderbergh is interested in. Because, like, I remember Ocean's 13 was all, like, bright colors, too. Like, orange.
Yeah.
I don't know. But,
I don't even remember something like this happening in the movie with the guy getting...
I think this is
That's another one of the cliches, isn't it? Outstretched.
Yeah. This is the assassin, isn't he? The gay assassin?
He was gay.
Yeah. Because that's how Benicio Del Toro got him, in trouble with the one gang. He, like, hit on him in a gay bar.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I clearly did
Plus
not
Plus, he
understand.
Had a lisp, which clearly indicated that he was gay.
Clearly.
As another movie cliche.
There you go. Gay character. Give him a lisp. Tight pants. Tight bicycle shorts.
He did wear those, like, he had, like, the really tight...
V-neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aviators, like, down in the middle.
Yeah.
For easy access. You can just pull them down. Like some kind of shirt zipper, those aviators.
But I think that's the assassin getting killed, which I don't really understand why that's on the front.
Yeah. Now that was... Why did he get killed again? He was trying to kill the guy who was testifying, right? At the order or
right.
behest of the pregnant woman.
Right.
Yeah.
Zeta Jones.
That's right, yeah.
But all right, one last question.
Yeah.
What's the better TV show, Arrested Development or The Wire?
See, that's another, you know, it's two different categories. It's you got
it's comedy. Sophie's choice, Sam. If you could only go to, if you could only watch one for the rest of your life.
Well, if it was Sophie's choice, I'd kill both kids to make it fair.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
There you go. She didn't either. They made all this hype about that movie. You kill both kids, then you're done with it. You know? Yeah, obviously, you don't have to feel guilty one way or the other.
She obviously couldn't forgive herself for choosing one, so she could have just killed
exactly, both of them. Exactly, you know? It's just, you might as well. All right, but Arrested or The Wire, that's tough. I mean, Arrested is, like, an amazing TV show, but it seems like The Wire is just, like I said, was talking about before, when I watch The Wire, my life is pretty much over. Like, it's like, goodbye family, goodbye school, goodbye work, you know.
I'm pretty sure both of them have 53 episodes, too.
Really? I guess the difference in time that there is, what is it, Arrested is 20 minutes.
Right.
So it kind of takes a lot out of you.
Oh, The Wire had 60 episodes, sorry.
60?
Yeah.
Misquoting this whole time.
I know. Didn't do our homework on this.
This is embarrassing.
But overall, I think it was a good podcast.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm James, and you are
Sam,
and that has been Oddcast.